From KDMK Community Access Radio in Carbondale, Colorado, in the United States, this is program number 51 of the Tactile Traveler, empowering blind and low vision people to explore the world and helping our sighted friends see the world in a new way. I'm Nick Eisenberg. When blind people go places, we don't experience things like our sighted friends. We don't see beautiful mountains or romantic sunsets. The goal of this program is to identify and even create experiences that are more meaningful or just more fun for us and our sighted traveling companions. Frequently, as people lose their eyesight, they become more and more isolated. The Tactile Traveler hopes to empower people to not only go literally around the world, but around the block to new experiences in our lives. Blind ranges from people who are visually impaired, and glasses and contact lenses no longer allow them to lead a normal life, to people like me, who are totally blind, to sighted parents who have a blind child, blind parents who have sighted children, and blind parents with blind children, and people of all ages, interests, and physical abilities. On today's program, an exercise in exercising and blind pickleball. Many Americans, like people in many first world countries, don't get enough exercise or have enough physical activities. If we're blind or visually impaired, we might get even less. But we can enjoy the benefits of a less sedentary life.
Exercise has a multitude of benefits. One is it fights the aging process. You tend to stay younger. It improves your function in daily life. So whatever you choose to do, you can do it better. And I think that one that people don't talk about, but is clearly defined in the research, is that exercise improves brain function and your cognitive skills. We know that if you get 30 minutes a day of some type of aerobic or endurance exercise, at least 3 days a week, preferably 4 or 5, it tends to oxygenate the brain, so the brain will work better. I think I would probably say about exercise is that it's going to improve people's mental outlook and their mental health. If for no other reason, first off, you get a break from whatever is bothering you, you focus on something else, and you can feel better for two reasons, that break. And the second thing is, as you develop mastery over something, whether it's riding a bike or lifting weights or doing resistance bands in a certain way, that specific self-confidence and increased ability in those areas transfers to other areas in the person's life, and they just feel better and more confident.
That's one of the top exercise physiologists in the world, Neil Wolkendorf, PhD, medical director for the Colorado Center for Health and Sport Science.
I got into exercise physiology through ski racing and ski coaching, and then have, after a graduate school, worked for the Winter Park ski area, and I've done stints with the U.S. ski team, Denver Broncos, the Nuggets, other athletic associations. I've worked a lot with golfers, and now I'm writing some additional books, forming research on nutritional supplements, and one of the main areas I work with is with golfers, especially senior golfers who have the same issues of, hey, I was a lot better 30 years ago, how do I get this back?
Full disclosure, Neil was a participant in a workshop I taught about 25 years ago on how to get into the news, how to say it so it won't be edited, and how to be the expert in your field who's always quoted in the news. Dr. Lauren Lieberman teaches at the State University of New York, where she specializes in physical education for blind students and students with all kinds of disabilities.
I'm a distinguished service professor at SUNY Brockport in Brockport, New York, near Rochester, New York. I started my career at the Perkins School for the Blind, teaching in the deafblind program there. And then now that I'm a professor, I teach adapted physical education, and I also run a summer sports camp for kids who are blind and visually impaired called Camp Abilities. And we have them now all over the world.
Lauren Lieberman says there are additional benefits of exercise.
Well, in order to have a good quality of life and be able to do the things that you want to do, as far as like work and travel and be able to do the things that you want to do and to have stamina and strength, do everyday things, it's important to exercise. But also, if you're involved in sports and recreation, you have more things to talk about and more friends that like the same things that you like.
One of the reasons we need to exercise is that the progress that has made our lives easier has made it too easy.
Get the basics first. You need 150 minutes a week of moderate to vigorous intensity activity. And do that first, and then you can think about all these other things that you might do in terms of participating in a sport with somebody as a guide or whatever the case may be.
According to the National Center on Health and Physical Disabilities, NCHPAD, studies have shown that individuals with visual impairment, specifically children, exhibit lower levels of fitness than sighted peers. It has been well documented that physical activities benefit individuals of all abilities, and there's no exception for people who are visually impaired. According to the NCHBAD, if you're not used to exercising, you're going to have to make some differences on how you use your time, but maybe not as different as you might think.
You've got to start with the basics. Get the basics first. You need 150 minutes a week of moderate to vigorous intensity activity. And do that first, and then you can think about all these other things that you might do in terms of participating in a sport or whatever the case may be.
Some of the things, like walking dogs, probably doesn't have all of the benefits we've been told.
Walking dogs is not necessarily good exercise for the dog because they want to stop and sniff, unless you have some type of dog that just wants to go. I have dogs and they've got to walk once or twice a day. I don't think it's great exercise for the dog, and I definitely don't think it fits what we consider as cardiovascular exercise for humans. I think it gets you out in the air. You might experience different trails. You might react to the dog. But from an exercise perspective, it just doesn't count for much.
Walking in general may make you feel good, but unless you're walking up steep hills, it may not do too much for your heart.
The problem with recreational walking is people just don't go fast enough. So it's going to have a minor impact on the person's health, but it's not really going to be per unit of time as beneficial as something where you can control the intensity of the motion without dealing with all those obstacles on the sidewalk or in the path. Hey, well, I just want to go for a casual walk. I tell people, I say, if you just want to go around and explore things, you really need to do that about 3 hours a day before you get any benefit out of it.
Neil Wolkendorf says the best way to get aerobic exercise, a stationary bike.
I think for people that are visually impaired, exercise bikes are probably the best thing to do, because once you get it set to your height, you don't have to change it. It's incredibly hard to fall off a bike. So I think that is probably a much better idea than going for a walk. The problem with walking is simply that you have to walk a lot faster than people think. And there's always potholes or differences in the sidewalk or things like that. I think that the fresh air and sounds and the birds and meeting the dogs and the cats and other things that you do are wonderful. But there's a lot of obstacles with your feet. So I'd probably say riding a stationary bike is the best way to go.
Our problem with digitally controlled exercise equipment is that we may not be able to see the digital screen to make adjustments on speed and resistance. Neil Wolkendorf says newer equipment can be programmed so you set it the way you want it and just push the quick start button, and there's no need to see the display screen. He says if you shop around, you should be able to find a used exercise bike for $150. The best bikes are commercial ones that have come from gyms and health clubs. After you get your aerobics down, you have to work on strength training. If you're going to do it at home, you can use exercise bands if you don't have weights. If you're going to work out in a health club or community center or gym, ask someone who knows what they're doing to teach you how to use the machine. And don't overdo it.
The issue about exercise is that each decade we get past age 30, it takes 10% more time to make a training adaptation. It takes 10% more time per decade to recover. So, for example, with weightlifting, the thing I often recommend to people over 50 is don't try to weightlift like you might have done when you were 20. Don't do it 4 days a week or 3 days a week. Pick 2 days a week, Monday, Thursday, Tuesday, Friday. Give yourself enough time in between sessions to actually recover. Expect to be a little bit sore, a little bit uncomfortable for the first week or maybe 3 weeks. And then once you undergo that adaptation process, you're probably not going to be as sore.
If you're on Medicare, your Medicare Part B may pay for silver sneakers, which includes exercise classes and free health club memberships. Another source of exercise is using stairs. We've been taught, as our parents get older, we're supposed to say something like, "Mom, Dad, you're getting older. It's time you move out of your two-story house where you have a support group to a single-story home where you might not know the neighbors." Research at the University of Ottawa in Ottawa, Canada, found that people who live in two-story houses live longer than single-story folks.
They get a difficult situation, and they can't lower their body weight or respond to what they're landing on. So I think stairs have a benefit that way. But I should say this, stairs are good as a starting point, kind of like a bike, but they're not near as good as riding the bike or lifting weight. If you have really bad knees, you maybe not want to take stairs, but I'd say, well, fix your knees and take stairs.
Lauren Lieberman says, before exercising our bodies, we need to do an exercise in being assertive.
One is they have to advocate. You're going to go to a YMCA or go to a fitness center. They have to make sure that the people there know what they need. And they also have to be able to go and see the facility, know what's there, understand how to use all the machines properly. If it's fitness, if they're going to be running, they need a guide runner and they need to train the guide runner how to run with them. Depending on what they're doing, there might be some prerequisites in order to make it successful. Say, for example, you wanted to go for a run and a person is pushing you on your shoulder. You want to take their elbow or you want to hold on to a tether. So you need to say, "Excuse me, let's not run. This isn't the way I run. Please listen to me." And then you show them how you run.
Lauren Lieberman teaches future teachers.
One is to have high expectations for people who are visually impaired and blind. And two is to give time before their activity for pre-teaching and comprehension. And so the person with a visual impairment can figure out what they need and can ask for it. A lot of times you might ask someone what they need, but they might not even know until they try it. Just about every sport can be modified and adapted to include people who are visually impaired and blind.
Exercising doesn't have to take time away from things you already do. For example, I do my floor exercises and use my elastic bands during the 10 o'clock news. And I often make hour to hour and a half personal calls where I don't need to be near my computer. So I make them while I'm on my stationary bike. Neil Walkendorf says the first step to good health is the one you take getting up from your couch or office chair.
Every hour, get up and move around, walk around where you live for 3 to 5 minutes. Sitting is the enemy, and sitting is one of the big factors in obesity and also the increase in issues like diabetes and metabolic syndrome. So if you want to push those things back, make sure that once an hour you get up and you walk around your place for 3 to 5 minutes.
And he says, you're never too old to exercise. When scientists were trying to determine where people live the longest and why, they marked them on a world map with a blue pen, and they became known as blue zones. The only blue zone in the United States is Loma Linda, California, where residents are 10 times more likely to live to 100 than most places in the United States. One of the reasons is that about half the people living in the city of under 25,000 Our Seventh-day Adventist, a religion that encourages its followers to be vegetarians, but not vegan. They do eat dairy products like milk, cheese, and ice cream. And their religion discourages the use of alcohol and tobacco. So I wanted to know how blind people in Loma Linda exercise. 66-year-old Archer Felder is visually impaired. He doesn't live in Loma Linda, but he lives so close. He walked to Loma Linda's University Health Center to work out for 4 years after being diagnosed with diabetes.
I was a health nut. You know, I like to eat healthy things and exercise, but at the same time, because I had diabetes at first, they put me as being a diabetic person. So that made me want to start exercising so I can get better myself.
It worked. Archer no longer has diabetes. Archer, who isn't an Adventist, feels he did benefit by Loma Linda's health-oriented atmosphere. He now is a full-time student at the Lighthouse for the Blind in nearby Redland. 67-year-old Arlene does live in Loma Linda. She asked us not to use her last name. Arlene is a Seventh-day Adventist. She also is visually impaired. She attributes the relaxed and supportive atmosphere, along with exercise, to people's long life expectancies. She visits the University Health Center a couple of days a week.
Every other time, just kind of a circuit, some weight training, and a life cycle. Sometimes I walk the indoor track or the outdoor track. They have classes like water aerobics you can also take. Some classes for seniors of balance and yoga. During the daytime, they have courses more for retirees and seniors. In the early morning and evening, it's more geared for the university student. So it's a center that reaches lots of age groups, which is kind of cool.
Kara Riggenstam and Sandy Wood helped with this story. You're listening to The Tactile Traveler, empowering blind and low-vision people to explore the world and helping our sighted friends see the world in a new way. I'm Nick Eisenberg. Invented in 1965, pickleball increased in popularity until it's become the fastest-growing sport in the United States and has been for the last 3 years. It's played by active people well into their senior years and is a great sport for socializing and exercise. For those of us who are blind and visually impaired who would like to share that socializing and exercise have been left in a bit of a pickle. Even though people have been playing for 59 years, no one has figured out how to adapt it for us. It's kind of a cross between tennis and ping pong, played with a modified wiffle ball type ball, a ball that has to be so light that no one has figured out how to put a noisemaker inside it, so we can tell where it is. But someone is changing that.
My name is Sandy Halkett. I'm the founder and executive director of Adaptive Pickleball. We are a 501c3 nonprofit based out of Greer, South Carolina.
Sandy is starting by working with people who have some functional vision.
Because we have different color balls and we may stand net and the players at the baseline, and we walk toward them until they can pick that ball up and we find out which ball they can see at a greater distance. You know, we'll walk toward them until they say, yep, I can see it, or no, I can't see it. Walk and keep coming closer, and then they can find the ball. That's just a real, real simple way to test which color ball they can see better. And I recommend trying to order and play with those color balls when they're playing. Something important to remember is the backdrop of where they're facing. Got somebody with visual impairment and they're facing a crowded backdrop of maybe it's another court right behind them or just something busy. It's going to be very difficult for them to pick the ball up. So we try to make sure that person's always facing a wall or something in the background that's very limited you know, with distractions. And the color of that wall can play a part too. The color of the wall and the ball need to be different as much as possible. For instance, we went to a facility that had kind of a greenish wall and they were playing with a green ball and I struggled to find the ball. So we want to make sure that the ball and their backdrop are very different so they can pick that ball up as best they can.
Then Sandy tests the ability of potential picklers to move around the court.
If they're able to run, move side to side, I would test all those skills first, even in a warm-up, kind of like have them jog to the net and back. You know, how good is their depth perception? Do they know when to stop at the net? Or, you know what I mean? Just making sure that they're on their feet and they're good to go on that respect.
If for some reason a player can't run back and forth on the court, Sandy has them play in a sports wheelchair. Sandy lets players get used to hitting the ball by suspending the ball on a string attached to an expanding golf ball retriever.
Does that allows me to be at a safe distance that I don't get hit with the ball. Plus, I don't have to chase the ball. But added bonus, I will swing that ball from the ball retriever, telescoped out, and then let them hit it from there. It kind of reminds me of when I was a kid and I played tetherball, string and a ball, and you try to wrap it around the pole. Well, it kind of reminds me of that. I'll swing it out to the player and let them hit it. They get a feeling of the ball on the paddle. They hear the sound of that. And we start maybe with just bringing the ball, swinging it toward their paddle, letting them know, swing now, giving them verbal cues. It's coming, swing now. And you can kind of guide it to their paddle and that helps them a lot. And they have a lot of success that way too, just understanding the feel of the ball, the sound on the paddle. So that's a pretty cool way to start. And then graduate them to hitting the ball up against the wall. See if they can track it and hit it back to themselves. And even before that, maybe have them start with paddle taps where they're just tapping, see how many times they can bounce the ball off their own paddle. That's hand-eye coordination and letting them have a visual if they can see it that close. And just see how many paddle taps they can get each time they show up. Say, okay, last time you did, you know, 5 in a row. Maybe let's try to get to 6 or 7 this time.
In most blind sports, there are noisemakers inside the ball, like bells and basketballs, soccer balls and volleyballs, and electric things that beep inside baseballs, and even the bases, and a metal container with ball bearings in it inside hockey pucks. Pickleballs weigh less than an ounce and have to bounce, which so far has stopped blind jocks from making them jingle. Sandy has an idea to make pickleballs audible. If you'd like to help her, contact her at adaptivepickleball@gmail.com. I also have some ideas. One would be to tune the ball. The second would be to put something like a reed used in some musical instruments inside the ball. Remember, since this is blind pickleball, not pickleball, the ball can be totally different. Instead of round holes, it could have slits or other shaped openings that lend themselves to making noise. Alex Cartwright and Mark Adler helped with this story. Why, it's my talking scale, reminding us that we'd like you to weigh in on how we're doing. Please let us know by sending an email to thetactiletraveler@gmail.com. We spell traveler the American way with one L. We'd also like to hear your story ideas from all over the world. Please send us an email with story ideas in the subject line to thetactiletraveler@gmail.com. Transcripts of this program are available for our deaf listeners by searching The Tactile Traveler in any search engine. This program's also being broadcast on AfterSight, formerly the Audio Information Network of Colorado, and audio information networks in additional states. It's also available by typing The Tactile Traveler into any search engine and available wherever you get podcasts. And by asking your smart speaker to play the podcast, The Tactile Traveler. We'd like to thank the following people and organizations that help make today's program possible. Be My Eyes Microsoft Accessibility Tech Support, Apple Accessibility Tech Support, Daniel Simon, Leslie Steffens, Pat Conneroe, Lorraine Hutchinson, Debbie O'Leary, Sarah Williams, Sophia Williams, Kaylee Romero, and Raleigh Burley. This has been the Tactile Traveler, empowering blind and low vision people to explore the world and helping our sighted friends see the world in a new way. This has been a production of KDNK Community Access Radio, Carbondale, Colorado.